Welcome to Nota Bene, Nate Freeman. This is kind of weird. We're broadcasting in front of a live studio audience that is massive in scale.
An incredible turnout here at the Armory Show.
What they lack in volume, they make up for in their good looks and I'm sure sophistication as well.
Benjamin, after a whole summer of doing this via the Zoomy, we are now not only just in person, but in front of a live audience.
Nate, making a podcast every week is always super weird and bizarre, and even the more so to do it in front of an audience, and even more so to do it in front of an empty audience. I'm not sure if I took enough Xanax to really get me through the next hour of my life.
Just chop it up.
We're going to make a try. We're here, yeah, live at the beautiful Javits Center for the opening, the vernissage, if you will.
What's the last time you were at the Javits Center? Was it for an art fair or was it for another reason?
No, I was here to get my first two jabs of the cursed COVID 21 vaccine, whatever it's called.
Oof.
I got my microchip.
It was Kobe
full of, it was full of National Guardsmen with like in the fatigues. It was like really something straight out of George Orwell with like announcements over the loudspeakers. They're kind of moving us through pens.
And how things have changed.
Yeah, I mean, this feels pretty similar, actually. Aesthetically, maybe a bit different, but really the same vibe. We are all just veal being marched off to the slaughter of the market.
There's a lot going on today in the world.
Nota Bene joins the country in mourning the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and we'd like to extend our deepest sympathy to King Charles III and the royal family at this time. Long live the king.
Long live the king. You heard it here on Nota Bene.
With that out of the way, it's an exciting week, not just the Armory, this incredible art fair back in New York. New York is abuzz with people, with openings, with art, with parties.
Benjamin, I want to know about your night last night. I believe you went to an opening and then dinner at the Odeon.
One of our favorite restaurants. Opening a very dear old friend of mine, Dan Colon, at the Gagosian
Gallery.
Shout out
friend of the pod, Dan Colon, fellow Hudson Valley resident.
His farm's a little bigger than yours, though, I think.
It's a little bigger, but we're not measuring farms here, are we?
I think we're always measuring in one way or another. It was his first show in New York in a very long time. Originally showing with Rivington Arms back in the day. And then his first show with Gagosian was actually in the bathrooms of the Gagosian Galleries.
Famously in the bathroom.
Sponsored and put on by a good friend of ours who was not in attendance last night. But the show, I thought, was incredible. Interesting market, I mean...
Who was
really
there?
Big.
Were all the old heads there?
Oh, that Nate was there. Hannah was there. The entire like old crew was in attendance. Chloe was there. Kind of the world was there. Larry was there.
Sick.
Fit as a fiddle, looking great.
Of course.
Looked well rested after his summer out east. It was like a packed room down at the Odeon. I saw the show a couple days ago because I was considering...
Because you don't go to openings.
...placing a couple of... Yeah, I don't go to openings.
You don't go to openings.
They give me social anxiety. It's full of people you maybe know but don't want to talk to. I go to see the art beforehand, and then I show up at the dinner later.
That's what I did today, actually. I went uptown to get a sneak peek at Issy Wood's new show, her first show with the Michael Verner Gallery. It's a knockout. It's spectacular. We love it.
It's a nice jewel box of a gallery for her. I like that. So the dinner was great. Crazy speeches. We had Stefan Radeberger from the Gagosian in London give a great speech talking about the long history of Dan with the gallery, including that bathroom show. And then we had Dan's handler at the gallery, Miss Sophie Cohen, gave a cute little remarks. And then Dan got up and talked about the farm and the work and the many years. I mean, there's a body of work that's been over 10 years in the making before they got the paintings just right.
We discussed this on the podcast before, but do you recall a certain dinner for Dan in London a few years back, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. What's that restaurant called? Pharmacy?
It's called Pharmacy. It is the Damien Hirst restaurant in Damien Hirst's mausoleum to himself.
Yeah, yeah. That was a crazy night. Would you remember a speech from that night?
I do recall a speech.
I was pretty zonked out, I got to be honest. It was
Francesco Bonomi gave a speech about a certain element of Dan's anatomy that he went on and on and on about.
Yeah, he was definitely talking about Dan's huge hands. And so that was super entertaining and very long-winded and very Italian speech.
Well,
what about you? You've been in town for a minute. You came in from the Hudson Valley. New York like right now?
I came in on the Amtrak from Rhinecliffe, went straight to MoMA, saw the Wolfgang Tillman show. Spectacular. Really, really excellent. I think that people are going to be very excited to see it. It takes over the entire sixth floor. Usually that's split into two different shows. No wall text, just art. It's fantastic. Wolfgang himself was there hanging out. There were some great pictures from Hong Kong in 2018, where I recall you and I were at a certain event where Wolfgang was DJing.
Oh, God, what's the name of that club? That club is so good.
I have no idea, but it's dingy. It was funky. It was sweaty.
Not Golden Eye, Something Eye, Dragon Eye. I don't know. It's a fucking one of the best nightclubs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
His set of like super deep old school house with Rub and Tug was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I went right from that club back to my hotel room, threw all my sweaty clothes in the Rimowa, and went right to the airport back for the 18 hours, and I slept like a fucking baby.
Oh,
I haven't slept that good since then. I mean, you now have a small child. You know, like, you just don't sleep that well. An international flight to Asia, always my best sleep, especially after a night of dancing out the sweat.
If you get the lie flat, it's quite comfortable.
How else the fuck would we get to Asia, bro?
So, yes, I got in, went to MoMA. Last night, I went to a sort of art-related event. I went to a launch for the new J. Crew, where a number of prominent fellow podcasters were in attendance.
Are they rebuilding J. Crew, like post-Mickey Drexler and post-Jenna Lyons? Is that her name?
Yeah, they hired the guy from Noah Clothing to...
Don't know what that is, bro.
It's okay. It's fine. To reinvent the whole thing, and they had a concert with the AAAs performing. Quite the throwback. It was quite exciting, quite exhilarating. Little rock and roll show in the basement. And then dinner at Indochine across the street.
Oh, chic.
Yeah.
What time was dinner served?
Because of the chaos of the show, I don't think mains came out until around 11, at which point people were pretty hungry, pretty
drunk.
And
dinner was after the show?
Yeah.
Oh, hell no. I'm far too old for that. Like, they dropped the desserts at 11, and I was out the door of the Odeon at 11:05. Pedophores, not that great. The food at the Odeon, I don't know. The fries were good, but otherwise...
Fries are good. I mean... You know,
otherwise highly mediocre. It's always tough to do a dinner for like 400 people all at once. Mm-hmm. Anyway, crazy week in New York. We have this fair opening. We're live at the Vernissage. There's quite an energy out there. We have a couple other fairs that are opening today and in the past couple weeks. Then we have like the Tillman Show at MoMA you just mentioned. I'm just going through a quick list of everything I'm looking forward to seeing in the next few days. Schnabel at Schnabel.
Schnabel at Schnabel. Can't be better.
Can't be better. Julian at Vito. We got Lucy Bull opening on Saturday at Kordansky. Saul LeWitt Show is now open at Paula Cooper.
The old Paula Cooper space, now newly renovated.
Julie Very Curtis. Exciting.
At the Anton Kern Gallery.
Sable Elise Smith at our friend JTT.
Jasmine's excellent space on Broadway in Tribeca.
Brian Beloit at Canada.
Let's fucking go.
Brian, absolute legend, man. Absolute legend.
The madman himself.
Hank Willis Thomas.
At the Jack Shaman Gallery.
Good friend. Just saw him
tonight.
A couple days ago. Izzy Wood, you just talked about. Cheyenne Julian. Kyle Thurman at David Lewis. Jordan Castile. Cahill Robert Irving.
The city's alive.
Arthur fucking Jaffa showing the full cut of the White Album film for the first time Old Space. And then we're joined today
by two incredibly illustrious guests. I am very, very pleased to call them my friends, Andrew Kuo and Joe Cole.
What's up, guys?
Give them a round of applause.
Thanks for having us. Yes, amazing.
Thanks for having us.
Finally on the Nota Bene pod.
Joe, we've had you on the pod before, but we've yet to have Andrew, who has, he actually has a real podcast with like thousands of listeners, so we brought in a ringer to entertain this massive audience here today.
Thank you for having us, man. This is incredible.
And you're also like an artist I really like. I really identify with the work and
me too.
The vibe of the work, if I can say. It's not really an art historical term, but there's a anxiety to it and a grappling with the world and trying to find your place in the world through your art that I find at least really easy for me to identify on a very personal level. In addition to being a fine artist, you also do some work for the New York Times on occasion, or regularly, I should say. You have the podcast, which focuses on pop culture and basketball. One of those two things I know a lot about and care about. The other one I kind of care about but know nothing about.
It's kind of niche.
Basketball is not niche.
Much like Nate and I, you're a man who enjoys the culinary arts in a very deep and meaningful way. So we thought, A, how had we not had you on before, and what a better opportunity than to have you on now. How was your summer, dude?
It's been amazing. I cannot think of three other people that like Chinese food as much as I do.
This is true, and we were going to get to that.
You are pretty real in that regard. My summer's been going amazing. Been hanging out with this guy, Joe Cole. We're all dads now, so I'm wrangling
a kid. We're all dads now. This is true. Four dads now.
How old is your kid?
One and a half.
Oh, shit.
He's a spirited guy. He has none of the anxiety, as far as I can tell, that I did or maybe we did as kids. He's just all up in everything. He's great. You know, Yeah, amazing. You know what kind of summer I had.
Yeah, we can use the
Wii. Anxiety is there for you to build in him over time.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. They catch it from you. It's fucking evil. I see it happening.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I see it happening
live.
I can
still ruin more stuff.
Yeah, it's super grooming. You were in the city for the summer, I presume?
Yeah, I don't go anywhere. I went to L.A. for a night to do an opening at Tanya Leighton Gallery.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. It looked amazing.
Thanks. It was awesome. It was in a place called Mid City. I've never heard of anything called Mid City, but is that like is that tattling on yourself?
I think that's where the Nakashima building was in Die Hard.
Yeah, that's Mid City.
Is that real?
For real, yeah.
Oh, damn.
Well, I think Nakashima was Century City.
What?
I think Nakashima was Nakatomi?
Nakatomi, yeah.
Was Century City.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
We got to rewatch Die
Thank
Hard.
God we have such a broad-based audience to provide us with the knowledge.
But Quill, what was your, so you had one night in LA for the opening. How did the opening go? Did you get to check out anything else in the city? That was
the opening was amazing. I got to check out the walk from my hotel to the gallery and then back. Okay, so I was like, I'm in LA. I'm a taco fan, as we all are. I was like, I'll get something on the way. The best taco I've ever had, whatever. I've been to LA a bunch. I know they're all there. Nothing. Disaster. Walking through underpasses. It was a taco desert. And then, to my disappointment, I go back to my hotel room, and they're wrapping up, but it was like a whole block of generators and tables and barbecues and people partying. And I was like 20 minutes too late.
Damn.
I got to ask, why did you just go for one night?
I got a kid, man. I had to come back and help out ruining another person's life.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I identify with that. But that's rough, like a one-night trip to L.A. That's rock star shit.
But spending the summer in New York, nothing is better than that. I mean, I've been up in Kingston. I've only touched down a few times. And, you know, it's a spectacular energy here, you know?
I grew up, I don't know if you guys can relate to this. I grew up thinking New York City was just like exactly like the beginning of the movie Kids or like... Not the end, the beginning. So it's just like skateboards and sweaty backpacks.
Montage scene.
Yeah, yeah. Daniel Johnson, 40s, you know, like. So I love August. I love July. It's the best. But when you get older, it's hard to roll into work or your domestic life. It's just like drunk on 40s at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
Trust me, I tried. Doesn't work.
When did you first get to the city?
When did I first get to the
city?
I kind of grew up here. I was born in Queens and then spent my kid years in Edgemont, but my father worked at the UN and my mom worked at NYU, so I was just constantly down here. If I die, I scatter my ashes on Mott Street when I die.
Did you come into the city all through high school? Was this like your social outlet?
Kind of, because it was like there was no childcare, so they're like, okay, here's a ticket. Get on the Metro North. You'll be there in like 25 minutes. It was... great. I miss Mott Street in its old form, but I had lived down there ever since college. Went to college with Dan, talking about knowing that guy for a long time. And so I've been down in Chinatown for like 2 decades.
Wow.
Amazing. And grimy.
And like working backwards, you now have a New York gallery, Broadway. Like how long have you been showing in galleries in New York? Like how much of that 20 years have you been like an active working artist?
God, the first show I had was right out of school at V Magazine had a gallery in their office. So it was like the first opportunity I got to do anything in New York City. So I did that. And then pretty regularly, I was lucky enough to show at Taxer and Spengemann for years and then Marlboro. And now I'm lucky enough to be with this guy, Joe and Pascal at Broadway. It's pretty sick.
That's a lot of years, you and Pascal, man. That's amazing.
We're homies, for sure. Yeah. And we're in a band together, and we do T-shirts together. As Joe can attest to, that guy is pretty solid.
Oh, yeah. Just because you mention it, like, I wouldn't say it's part of your practice, but, like, you make a fucking fine hat, like a really, really fine hat. As a connoisseur of the dad hat, like, how did that part of what you do in life
That
begin?
Is a high compliment because I know we've talked about this and I know you're an expert in dad hats, so thank you.
I'm a balding dude, so I gotta be.
I mean, it's a good way to hide. I mean, we're all cap guys, except for Nate. I don't really see you in a hat that much.
I mean, I wear your hats. You know, that's my go-to.
The wet paint
got a full head of hair.
Yeah. I do still have hair, a little bit.
No, hats are the best, right? Like, T-shirts are too expensive just to, like, produce and give away because they're never the right size. People can only wear them like once out of every 2 weeks, if that. Hats is the best. The cost is low. They're not easy. They're not hard to design, and people can wear them every day.
Yeah, I mean, you can wear it with anything. You're like, you know, look at Mr. Cole over there rocking a suit and a baseball cap.
Well, I mean, I owe a good chunk of my wardrobe to Andrew Cuo and his hats and T-shirts over the years, probably.
That's maybe an understatement. One of the best restaurants in New York City.
Top five restaurants.
Ooh.
What are your top five right now, Joe?
Oh, I can't fill that list out. I just know it's in there somewhere.
No, you can do this.
You can do it.
No, come on, Cole. I know you.
Anywhere else, you know, nowhere else, why not now? Let's go.
Oh, man. I mean, I'll just ramble them off quickly, which is not a lot of thought into it. This has to do not just with the food, but the overall, it does for
me
personally.
We're five people here. Yeah. We're five people.
Frenchette.
Let's go.
Chez Matin.
Fuck yeah.
Scars.
Oh, yeah.
Woo's.
Mm-hmm.
How many was that?
You're missing one that I know you're forgetting.
What am I forgetting?
Mr. Chow's. Place is awesome.
Do you love Mr. Chow's? I fucking love
Mr. Chow's.
I do have a soft spot in my heart for Mr. Chow's. Any location of Mr. Chow's.
You told me on the street a few weeks ago that is your number one.
I've been trying to get people to go there with me for like 3 months, and no one will go.
I will go in a heartbeat.
I'll go anytime.
I love Mr. Chow's.
One of the best parties I ever went to, and I flew across the country in part for it, was to go to the 50th anniversary of Mr. Chow's, and I have zero regrets about that, because how could you say no to that invitation?
I was invited to that, and I was deeply
Uptown
mad
one?
Be there.
Wait, what location of Mr. Chow's?
In L.A.
It was celebrating L.A., but it wasn't at the restaurant. It was like they rented out a massive, like they built out a space just for the party.
You guys are art market guys. Are his paintings, like, are they taken off? Like, I know, I've seen the paintings. They're nice, man. Come on.
They're nice.
They're nice. I don't know. Are they good?
It's really hard for me to look at them with like a pure sense, but I would... As someone who spends other people's money on art and on paintings, it would be hard for me to feel as though I was maybe doing my job really well if I suggested someone spend a lot of money to acquire one.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they're bad. That just means that the market hasn't taken them up.
But going back to Woo's really quick, I want to talk, now that Noodletown is back open, are we going to Noodletown or are we going to stick with Woo's? What's the move?
Woo's is no joke, man. We were just there last week.
Uh-huh.
That place is... It's got a good room. Noodletown has a great room, but that's mostly still like Chinatown gangsters and drunk frat guys, right?
It's a different thing. I don't think it's an either or situation, but I have a question. I went to Woo's for the first time since the spring, I guess, with the family. We've loved going there in the past. My kids love it. We usually go with another family or two, so you can really have a nice big group. So we went just the four of us, the two kids, wife and I, and like, it wasn't that great. And I think I fucked up the order, and I'm not sure what I did.
What'd you get,
I ordered
dude?
A lot of the things I've always gotten.
What'd you get?
So you got wonton noodle soup, obviously.
Good, great.
Peking style pork chop, which I usually love there.
That's amazing. The best thing there.
Well done.
It was terrible.
What happened,
bro?
They
were cold. Okay. They've clearly been cooked ages ago and brought out.
I
need to fill in. We showed up at about 3:30, 4 o'clock on the Monday of Labor Day, so I'm not sure if this affected the food.
Chinese kitchens don't care about that.
That's what I thought. I thought this is the perfect time. It won't be too hectic. I'm trying to list out what else we got. We got some fried rice for my daughter because I thought she'd like it. That was a bad choice anyway. But we didn't get the crab. We didn't get the lobster. You know, we got some steamed pork buns, which were actually incredible, even though I thought it would be too late and I thought they'd be bad. So much so we ordered two more orders because they're actually maybe the best, including in Hong Kong, steamed bao that I've ever had.
Yeah.
I'm more of a baked guy, but these were incredible.
I'm going to say one thing. You were sitting outside, right?
We were sitting inside. Was that the mistake?
No, I think usually sitting inside is the move because the food gets
I thought
you
I did
better.
All the right things, and I was like, I was like really disappointed. I felt like I'd failed my family because my son's always had great memories of it. And he didn't know it was off, but I was like, everything was like just not quite there. I don't know.
See, you need an Asian person there just to vouch
right.
for you, just to co-sign for everything, being like, we don't like this. And you turn to the Asian person. They're like, well, this is kind of authentic and good. This is stop being racist.
Yeah, no, but I know. But I thought about that. But I know my food. Like, I got the scrambled eggs with baby shrimp, which is like a pretty great dish there usually. And it was weird. It was all watery. The egg was like fucked up. It wasn't the baby shrimp. It was like the medium-sized shrimp.
The problem with Chinese restaurants, and I don't know if you guys think about this, there's certain chefs that are good and certain chefs that are bad, no matter what restaurant you go to. And we don't keep tabs on them like we do other chefs because they're not like documented. This is like kind of right. a loosey-goosey thing. So there's certain times and there's certain days you can go to a restaurant and it's better than others, even though it's the brand of Wu's. Mm-hmm. You know, like all their barbecue stuff is the same always, but the chefs there vary as much as like a burger guy or a French chef.
Yeah, I think that wow. must have been what it was. I mean, there's a great story of the, don't know his name, but a very well-known chef in the D.C. metro area that people had tracked down, and they kept losing him because he would change restaurants every year and a half or so. And like there was like this, it was back in the days of like Chow Hound and that kind of cult following food, and they would just like, they would track him down based on like people would sniff out like a weird menu in like suburban Virginia somewhere and be like, oh, that's where he ended up.
I think with Wu's, when it's good, it's like magical, and right. you're sort of chasing that vibe. And I mean, our meal there was not incredible the other night. It was really good.
Not with that attitude.
I've honestly had some of the best meals of my life, and for a while I would have called Wu's, especially in the kind of the end of the beginning of the pandemic, my favorite restaurant in New York. Full stop.
It was so good during the pandemic.
It really was. It was like game changingly good.
Yeah, the pandemic was odd because there were so many restaurants taking precautions, but it kind of felt like Christmas where the Asian restaurants were like, oh, we don't care about this. Like, we know all about this. We've been wearing masks for like a generation. So what mm-hmm. you're scared of, like if we're going to get the same or even more business being the only ones open, like let's go. And
Wu's, like a lot of those places also evolved. Like I ate there with Adam Abdallah. Just after outdoor dining opened, and it was a couple folding chairs and tables just on the sidewalk. And then, you know, a month later, they built that
I remember
hospitable
watching
thing out there with the Christmas lights. And it was great. We had a dinner for Devin's show there that was really Devin fun and vibey.
I went to a post-wedding luncheon there that was one of my all-time great New York City dining experiences. But also, I also think in my case, the problem was there weren't enough people. We didn't get the crab. We didn't get a lobster. Right. We didn't get any of the iconic. Just because I also think maybe if you order the centerpiece thing, they're like, oh, these folks are ordering well. Like, you know.
Right. But, I mean, it's not cheap. You know, the crabs are you know.
$70 or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's fantastic. It's great, and they do it so many different ways. They put, like, you know, crab fried rice. You know, you get the crab in the shell. You get all the kinds of ways, and it's all fantastic. It's so good.
But the degree of difficulty is there, too. If you're there with people, let's say, who want to go out afterwards and get a drink or maybe do something halfway, like white person fancy, when the crab comes, you're like, I would love to just deliver that into my face, but like I cannot get to the food in this dish. And I think that's where it goes wrong. But
seems pretty clear the four of us need to have Wu's together because
I think so.
You know, you need the right group of people.
Yeah, fuck these fancy art dinners tonight. Let's just go to Wu's and let's rectify my mistakes.
We can go right now. I can skip this dinner at Altrio.
Yeah, I want to fix my memory of it. Where else are we eating these days over the summer? What was the spot for you?
Yo, La Rock is crazy.
Okay, let's talk La Rock.
Very good.
We haven't had a chance to go yet. Or I haven't.
Woo! I think I've asked both of you independently about La Rock. I want to know everything about it. It's like big blockbuster Frenchette, right? It's
big
like
blockbuster Frenchette, which we love. Bigger menu, like lot more selections. A lot of little like an all dressed crab dish that, you know, feels like a real classic sort of thing.
People were really fucking with the leeks, right?
We got the viral leaks.
These leaks, these viral leaks. Tell me about them.
So it comes to it's like a table side thing. It comes to the table wrapped in.
Table side leaks?
Kind of.
These guys are fucking crazy.
Bawling out. We were there in the room. Jonathan Waxman was having his meal. And
let's go.
Pete Wells there for the second time. So it was a big night for the kitchen.
Pistol
we
Pete
psyched.
And Jonathan Waxman in the building?
Yo, Pete can be a hater. You know, that's like not a gimme right there. He's taken down some restaurants. Flavortown. But like, so the leaks are amazing.
Flavortown.
He took down Flavortown,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which kind of worked in Flavortown's favor, to be honest. I mean, who came out of the pandemic better than Guy Fieri?
Guy Fieri, but that restaurant itself is no longer in existence.
Oh no, it's
this
no
is true. This
no. But he has been recuperated as actually politically A-OK, like, you know, he's on the side of the gods.
Right. Guy Fieri is like cool now in like the BBSP universe, like along with like Dave Matthews Band. Like that shit's cool now.
yo, all these chefs couldn't handle
Dave, sorry. I got to stop this right here. Dave Matthews Band will never be cool.
No, I'm in this very specific universe created by the Blackbird spy plane, like, ification of everything. Like, Guy Fieri's cool, like, in this universe.
Like, Hootie's cool, right?
What?
Hootie.
Oh, Hootie, yeah. Hootie fucks. Dude, Hootie fucks.
No, Hootie got good. Darius Rucker got good. He's like, he had a full on, his PR agent should get
This a is a reach.
Oh, no. Darius Rucker became a star.
Time doesn't just make everything okay.
I'm flabbergasted. He is a star post. He's like Lana Del Rey, but he was successful the first time.
Mm-hmm. You listen to country music stations on the radio, you hear a lot of Darius Rucker. You do?
A lot.
I don't listen to country music stations on the radio.
Well, maybe.
I drive around upstate a lot. I'm listening to country music. I'm also listening to Radio Woodstock.
Those stations don't tune in Westchester.
No, Dave Matthews. Lord tunes in
Westchester. Dave Matthews is on repeat.
Can we go back to these leeks, though?
Okay, so they come wrapped in like some sort of leaf. I'm assuming it's like a banana leaf. It's charred. They unwrap it. It's two leeks. They slice the leeks in half, so it kind of unfolds like a eggplant. At you know,
damn, that's fucking crazy.
It was fine, and they pour a green sauce over it. They told us to get it just because everyone had been posting it. It was not the best thing we had,
really.
But it was. You got to get it.
You got to get it.
I mean,
it's the pressed duck pasta of 2022.
Pretty much, a wheel. Just a leak inside a bigger leak rolled to your table.
Okay, so a Russian nesting doll of leaks.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I'm down. As someone, we've talked about this, Nate and I, before. The way that the real estate company, Tishman Speyer, I guess, has been resurrecting the Rockefeller Center area by getting these dope chefs in there.
Olmsted
opening spots.
Yes, right?
You have Carlos and those guys, the mm-hmm. bar folks. You have, like, they're really picking, yeah. I think, really good people to come there. Ignacio, obviously.
Yo, are we all moving to Midtown? Is it the coolest spot in New York City?
It's the new Dimes Square.
I'm pretty sure the Upper West Side is the new Chinatown, from what I'm told, in terms of residential hipsterdom.
Is it?
Check for it in 2023. It's happening.
I thought that was like 10 years ago. Is it happening again? Is it cycle
I think it's happening again,
because
it's cheaper to live up there. No one can afford downtown. No one wants to live in Brooklyn.
I judge a neighborhood by like the next neighborhood over. So if you're in the Upper East Side, what's the next neighborhood over? Are we talking like Queens?
Westchester.
Yeah.
Damn.
Well, I was about to say, that brings up, why don't you tell the people, without blowing up your spa, because I don't want any stalkers, where you the family end up once you move from Dallas?
We live in one of the Sound Shore towns. I could say where. We live in Larchmont.
This is some Don Draper shit that you're on?
I think so, but I'm happily married and faithful, so, you know, it's a little bit different than Don.
Word.
But we live in Larchmont. I was about to say it's cool. It's not cool. It's great. But, you know, I don't need cool for where I go home at night.
Yeah, and at our ages, like, we're pretty fucking cool, and we've done all the cool shit, I think, everyone up here on this stage, like, pretty thoroughly. Like, so I think there's something cool
my dad had
about,
to talk
about giving
me.
It up.
It's great. We live, it's right on the water. There's, you know, my kids can get themselves to and from school. It's pretty idyllic, really.
But what about what are you doing? If you're there, say during the summer, you didn't come into the gallery on like a Monday or a Tuesday, where are you eating out? Is it like California Pizza Kitchen?
Don't knock CBK.
Wow.
I'm not. I'm just asking.
I mean, if once you make this commitment to these towns, you find yourself faced with making a decision about which club to join. Mm-hmm. So there's these different clubs that you wind up, you know, beach clubs, tennis clubs. Boy, I sound really awful.
Do they know about your background, or did you hide that?
I kept it pretty sheltered.
Yeah,
my wife is a pretty great representative of our family in that case. But there's a handful of restaurants that are sort of the kind of Upper East Side restaurants that no one knows the name of, but are solid. There's a few of those second locations in
sick.
Our town.
Okay, yeah. As someone who lives in the Upper East Side, like, that's the only restaurants available to us.
Did you ever
go
to Bistro Le Steak?
I don't know the names of them, but yeah, they're fine.
But
they're totally fine.
Yes, there is a Upper East Side style Italian, French restaurant, et cetera. They're totally serviceable. But also, at night, it's like a 20-minute Uber to the Upper East Side. A little longer to downtown.
We've experienced this. We've left the same event in the evening hours at the same time, and then you've texted me as you pulled into your driveway, and I went into my lobby
just
in the Upper East Side.
Flex?
Like 15 minutes later.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he's like, all, yeah, I get a backyard, owned. Bro. What's up?
It all depends. I mean, the train to Grand Central is like a half hour. Obviously, it takes me longer to get to Tribeca than a half an hour, but it works well for me.
What about like random dad friends? Because as someone who's like, I have to take my kids to school, or I'll hang out with them in the playground. You end up having to make small talk or chit chat with the other dads and moms.
Everyone's
like, can you find something to vibe on? Or
sure, I mean, you know, we can always talk about sports. Everybody's certainly really nice. It's still, everyone who lives there lived in New York City. Typically I would say Upper West Side, West Village, Upper East Side. There's a French American school that's apparently pretty good. So you have a lot of like people that work for the UN living up there. I keep wanting to say cool. It's really mellow. It's
chill.
It works.
Yeah. Chill, not cool, yeah. But chill. Yeah. Any potential clients possibilities up there?
I mean, I did see some short like club. Suspicious.
Bringing it back to the art market. This is how we do. That's how we do.
I did. I was walking my dog. It's not something I enjoy doing. And I did see some empty crates in a driveway just a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And I stopped to look at it. And Kristen's like, what are you doing?
You did some ambulance chasing?
Looking at this pile of trash. I'm like, those are art crates. So I'm trying to figure out who lives at this one house. But no.
Did it have the gallery marking on it?
It did have a gallery marking.
What gallery was it?
Did it have the Mr. Chow logo on it?
Zwerner. Oh, so this is a good potential client.
Woo. Yeah. No, and there are. I have some good friends who are really, really great collectors who actually live right across the street from us. But it's not... I wouldn't say it's a robust market of collectors there, but there's a handful.
But listen, every little bit helps, man. Those college, those kids' educations aren't going to pay for themselves.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, do what you can.
Are there a lot of art collectors in Westchester?
You know, historically there were. I mean, I think of Marty and Rebecca Eisenberg being the most iconical. I know they spend much more time in the city now, and his parents were up there. And I know there are others. They're just top of head.
Yeah. The Horts were up there.
Yeah, the Horts were up there. I mean, so a very specific type of collector, certainly. But are much like, there would have been much in a position like Joe's, who had been city people, moved out when they had kids, when they realized they need more space, and kept growing the collection. Although generally, most people that become really... Or historically, most people that become really hyper-serious, obsessive collectors is generally after the kids go to college, if they have had children, because like... If they're like not into golf or something like that, that's kind of like, there's not many possibilities.
No, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, I get to spend most of my waking hours during the week in Tribeca as well. So it's pretty, the balance for me works out. I get everything I need out of where I live and where I work. You know, I don't have to sell art at home.
And what about the fair? Like, how'd you guys do? You have a great solo booth.
Yeah, well, thank you. We have a nice solo presentation with Claire Oswalt, who's a fantastic artist based in Austin, Texas, and we did pretty well. There's nothing left in the booth. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it.
No, that's it. Brag on your shit.
Yeah,
you did a good
job.
Well,
listen, it's
or brag on her shit.
I guess
I should say.
It's a testament to Claire. Her work's really terrific. It's really been in demand and. Where she put together a great presentation for us.
Mm.
And, you know, you could have sold these anywhere, but talk about how important it is, especially at an art fair that's in New York, for her to be able to have more people, not just the commercial side, but have people be able to see the practice and get to know the work.
Well, that's exactly the point. This is an artist who there's a lot of interest in, and we really wanted to find an opportunity to get as many eyeballs, as many informed eyeballs on it as possible. There's enough interest that we could have, you know, there's other opportunities where we could have sold it. But when we talked to her about doing the Armory, it's, you know, a big fair on a big stage in New York, which I think all of us feel this is the city to be in for many
totally.
Things.
City's so nice they named it twice.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was the plan, and I think it worked well. And she's got a show with us coming up in the spring, so we've been able to talk to everybody about that, and they'll get a chance to see her again.
Yeah, I think
at the newly expanded gallery, you just reopened the space after a summer of construction. Were you busting down walls yourself? Were you getting the hard hat on?
We had a great crew, and I just stood.
You weren't even tempted to take a few swings.
I stood anxiously behind them, worrying, but it got done, and I'm grateful for that. And yeah, the gallery is the same location. We got the space adjacent to us, broke down some walls, as you mentioned, and it's about twice as big as it was. We've got a lot of other different sort of viewing room opportunities there, and yeah,
so sick.
Just getting started tomorrow, opening Jamila Sabor tomorrow.
Yeah, just cycling back, I think it's really smart to do at a fair like this, which, you know, is a great fair in a major city, but, you know, it's not Basel, it's not a Frieze, to do a one-artist presentation, or even, and you see it across the ecosystem, Galeries Werner do a two-artist presentation with Chris Ofili, like, you know, arguably one of the, you know, 10 greatest living painters, and Huma Baba, and really focus collectors' attention and give a chance and a platform for more people to be able to see and experience the work. So I think that was a bright move. What other fairs do you guys have lined up for the calendar year? Anything?
Let's see. What are we going to do? Another solo presentation with an artist you guys know, Adrian Rubenstein at NADA in Miami coming up.
Sick. Amazing.
What else? That takes us to the end of the year, I guess. What else are we doing? We're gonna do a solo with Edie Fake at Next Spring's Independent.
And Andrew, fairs are so weird, especially for an artist. I feel like, I think it's a great Baldessari quote, I think, who said it, that, like, you know, as an artist going to an art fair is like walking in on mom and dad having sex. Like, are these weird? Because it's so, like, crass and commercial, it's really hard to actually visually focus on anything. So maybe if it's your work, you don't feel as though, you know, it's really kind of the right environment. Like, what's your take on it? Do you usually go to these things?
I don't. This is usually your guys' environment.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm 100 into the idea of the partnership between the dealer, the consultant, the collector, and the artist. Like, I am not pure in any way in this process, but the skills and dexterity it takes to navigate this world is something I either don't have or cannot have, right? I don't, and this is kind of draconian, but I don't think an artist can do both. And a lot of artists can do both better than the next artist, but
I think this is just a tough environment for an artist to be in. I mean, this
listen,
is
I have to, and I don't mean to throw anyone under the bus, and I'm sure there are exceptions that prove the rule.
Oh, some people,
but it weirds me out actually when an artist is really into being at the fair, whether their work is there or not. Almost more so if their work is there, but in any case, you see them walking around, glad handling, and it's like gives me a little bit of pause. It raises my ick faster. But there are certain people that's what they do, and they're good at it, and they love it. But
I mean, in truth, this guy could handle being anywhere and doing anything. But I agree. We don't. It's not something it's not if they would like, if even artists presenting in the fair and they'd like to be here, by all means, certainly they should be here. But it's,
yeah, but maybe dissuade them from it.
I tell them exactly what we're saying and let them make the decision.
Yeah, they don't want to see that. They're going to hear their work talked about in the most base terms. You know, it takes a lot of
everybody,
the magic out of it.
I like art fairs a lot, but one of the things I like about it is everybody, it's very clear what everyone's here, why we're all here. And that's maybe not the best environment.
I like,
for the artists
I don't. I, even though I, my job involves being very social, actually, social environments actually kind of freak me out a little bit. I'm just good at navigating. And what I love about a fair is that, as you just said, the roles are so clearly delineated. You can do a little bit of small talk, but you're there to do business. How much is that? Is it available? Like, real clear to it. I remember one of my first bosses when I still worked at the New Museum, the great Richard Flood, who was the chief curator at the time, was like, "We work at a non-collecting institution. Sure, go to the fair opening. Don't interrupt any dealer for the first 2 hours because you're not buying anything. There's no reason for you to be taking their time." And I still walk around with that. Like, I'm not, see, some people don't realize that. And they'll start chit-chatting you, "Hey, how's it going?" And it's like, okay, you know, 90 seconds, fine, minute, you know, a couple minutes. But then after that, it's like, time to move on.
Bye. No, you're good. I'll see you, and there'll be an eye contact nod.
And also the knowledge of you and I can actually chat, and I know as soon as out of the corner of my eye I see someone that you need to be talking to, I'm like, "See you later, man."
Well,
peace out.
In theory, or actually in practice, you and I already talked about whatever it is I have here, in preview mode or whatever.
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, how you ruthlessly beat up on your wife in tennis, which is just, I think, really a terrible thing to admit.
That is an overstatement that may get me in a bit of trouble.
But how's your serve, though?
From one side of the court, it is pretty reliable.
You know, you could practice serving on the other side until you figure out how to do it.
I could, but my stamina is such that really I also have to save it all up for the one side of the court. Then I need to, you know, regain my energy. There's a management of, you know, I'm not in very good shape. And tennis is not, it's no pickleball. You've got to actually
I like how you got that in
fired.
There.
I mean, I did play pickleball for the first time last weekend. It was a lot of fun because it's like easy tennis.
Did you sweat?
I did sweat a little bit because, you know, I wanted to win, and I did win twice, which is fantastic. But it's like ping pong, basically. But you're like, you know, on a court, a small court.
When you say it's like ping pong, are we putting ping pong in the the area of a recreational activity or a sport?
Ooh. You can play. It's one of those things you can play it either way. Right. I've seen people play ping pong as a sport. Not me, but I've seen it on. I've seen it on totally. The screen, and it's a sport. These guys are fucking fire. Yeah. And I've seen me and my buddies, or basically anyone else who isn't a pro play. Right, that's some recreation league shit.
Yeah, I would put pickleball on the recreation side of things. I don't know if it's like an official sport, but it's a thing that you can do at like a party if someone has a pickleball court at their house, which is where I was doing it. And then, like, have a drink, you know, like, take a swim or whatever, and then play some more pickleball. It's, like something you can do
this,
socially.
I'm sorry. This is my problem with it. It's just the infantilizing of adult culture in America writ large. I think it's personified by this game that isn't
sure.
a sport.
Sure,
and it bugs me out.
It's also kind of fun, though.
It's grown-ass man wearing streetwear. It's just, you know, I don't know. I'm not here for it. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
But we need something to do. Like, geezers need excitement, right? Like, we just can't sit around and talk about, like, Chinese food all day.
I did some axe throwing unexpectedly.
Oh, tell me more.
Several weeks ago in Brooklyn, yeah. I was visiting with my kids, my brother-in-law in Park Slope. And
it sounds dangerous.
We ran out of things to do. We went to some place called Kick Axe.
Did you take the kids with you or is it just you?
They apparently, you only have to be 8 years old. So one of my
kids... You're 8 years old and throwing axes?
Yes. I had my five-year-old with me too. They set up like a Nerf one for him. But my 11-year-old threw some real ass axes at a
piece
of wood.
But it's like a shooting range. It's safe, right?
But they drink there. Like, it was safe. I mean, it was like noon and it was fine. But right. I think, you know, I don't know. I'm a little dubious about what it's like later there.
I guess I wouldn't mind knocking back a few beers at noon and throwing some axes. That sounds pretty pleasant.
I like to throw an axe.
I'm calling the next 2 years, like, archery is going to make a big comeback. I've spoken to
We've
two people recently
oh.
that have gotten into architecture. We guest of the pod, Mark Glimcher, has, like, an archery set up in his house.
What?
Yeah.
But this is so dangerous, right? Because you're not going to throw an axe and be like, okay, bro, stand there, and I'm going to put this cigarette box on top of your head, and I'm going to knock it off with this axe. But archery, like, we're doing this, right?
Right. No, I mean, like... You can just like
you
out
might
the
be doing that.
Kit.
I'm not doing that. Fuck no.
Yo, I've seen my friends do it. It's the most harrowing experience, man. Not only with archery equipment, but darts. Like, have a couple beers, being like, okay.
Oh, I could throw some darts.
But off of like my head with like a shot glass on top of it.
No, I can't do that.
Horrifying.
That wouldn't really pierce the skin.
These two peepers are my money makers. I got nothing else. I have no other fucking marketable skills.
Could it take an eye out? It could take an eye out.
The dart splits in two and hits both of your eyeballs.
I like playing darts. I used to play darts at this place called Bleecker Street Bar. You ever go to that place?
Sure, this is where this went down.
Still there?
Yeah. Great place to play darts. It's now like a dumb boutique or something. That whole neighborhood. We talked about Los Tacos number one, right?
Possibly, and me and Joe have talked about this.
What's
possibly the best food on the planet, at least as good as it. Tell me about something more delicious than that place.
It's incredible how good it is. It's also just like annoying though, especially that location on Lafayette. The lines are crazy. It's next to that viral cookie place that I have just don't care for.
Levain?
I don't care for Levain.
Yo, they're crazy good. They're good, man.
They're good.
They're like scone cookies.
Chocolate chip. Do it.
The lines are fucking insane. I'm not going to wait in that line.
They sell them frozen at Whole Foods if you go to that place.
Like, they're on their cronut shit. I can't abide.
The cronut was amazing. You're harshing on cronuts?
You and Dean Kissick is also a big cronut stan. And Dominique and Ansel have become like besties.
I'm on hour 20 of my intermittent fast, and I want to eat you all.
There are other Los Tacos number one locations.
Yeah, there's the Chelsea. Is the Chelsea one
the
still there?
The original Chelsea.
There's one in Tribeca. One. I did air quotes, but that's sort of almost financial district.
Yeah.
There's one outside Grand Central.
Wow. That's sick.
I love how you know where they all are. I guess you spend time at Grand Central. That's your commute.
Yeah, there's a new taco place. There's Dirty Taco.
What am I ordering at Tacos Number Dirty? One? Like, I've been a couple times. I've had a very solid, I wouldn't say a transcendent experience.
At number one? Number
yeah, what's the order?
I do the quesadilla with the al pastor.
Yeah, the al pastor there is really, really spot on. You can do quesadilla, you can do taco. I mean, it's great.
The cactus is not that great. Steak, I think, is a little bit boring. Chicken is kind of good, but it has to be the El
Pastor. I think the taco game in New York in general has stepped up a lot in the past 5 to 10 years. I still, someone who used to live in Southern California and lived for a portion of my early 20s on burritos. And I'm not talking about like the fancy San Francisco Mission. I mean like a classic, like down home dirty refried bean, rice, cheese, maybe a little bit of meat, grease, you know, lard fried tortilla, grease bomb. Cannot find one, and I would really like to.
Is it because of street vending laws here? Maybe.
Yeah.
Because
those burritos though are more like a Casavega, El Compadre.
Yeah,
sort of
burrito. That's like it's like a drive-in or a drive-through kind of Southern California thing.
I don't know. I mean, the Los Tacos number one is the closest thing to, you know, tacos that you can get in California or Texas for that matter. I mean, living here as a young man, you know, San Loco was the
ride or die for San Loco.
Not
mad. The bean and cheese, it's like $3 a hit.
I spent like 5 years in the early 2000s on Ludlow Street, and like that spot on, I forget what street it was on.
Rivington.
Rivington was like, I ate every other meal there.
Did you ever get the, where they wrap the hard shell taco in the soft shell taco?
Yeah. I assume?
Okay, just make
it
sure.
Come on, of course. But do you get it with cheese or do you get it with guac?
Whatever they had at the time I was there.
There was a bar,
I couldn't afford guac at that age.
There was a bar there, too. It was mediocre, but it has a romantic place in my
heart. Is Barrio Chino still around? I haven't been there in years.
Yeah, Barrio Chino sucks, still, dude.
It's okay. It's okay. Not bad. I mean, that block has not aged well. I don't think.
No,
I don't like
hasn't.
Many
that's,
things
that's
on
a
that
good
block.
Way to put
well,
it.
I mean, I would say, you know, Nate and I have talked about this, but I'd like to get you on this quote. So that area of kind of the Lower East Side, I feel like when the hotel on Rivington opened, that was like really the signal of its death knell. And I think that's what we're about to see in the area popularly referred to as Dime Square, even though it's a triangle, with the opening of the hotel that just happened. I feel like that's the absolute nail in the coffin.
Whoa, is Dime Square a real place?
It is a totally virtual place. It does not exist. It is a bunch of people who are really active on Twitter talking as if they were arguing about art, fashion, all this stuff. I mean, the Red Scare people aren't really there anymore. Like, Goots isn't even there that much anymore. Yeah. It all exists online, and then people make stuff up about it. I know Joe's getting angry. People make stuff up about it, being like, it's populated by Christians or socialists, and then they get mad at Christians and socialists, where it's like, it's a bunch of 50-year-olds trying to get home.
Well, I mean, it started out as a joke.
Oh, yeah, I probably...
I mean, the terminology of it.
All good things start out as jokes, right? Yeah, but, like, what are you referring to, like, calling it Dime Square?
Yeah, the phraseology of it and just even the notion that it was a place. It always seemed as, like, a...
Well, it's named after the 10th best restaurant on that block.
Shots!
I mean, no lies. Right. No,
I get just, like, I want to wrap it up. I do have one more important thing. I know you have a very popular basketball podcast. I know absolutely nothing about basketball. It's just not my sport. I'm too short, I think. But I'm wondering, do you guys? I'm not sure if you guys cover college basketball, but I'm wondering which is the worst college basketball team and why is it Duke?
With respect to our friend, Nate.
Thank you, Benjamin. I was not expecting that.
Because a corrupt participant in an awful system.
That's pretty fucking damning.
That kind of sounds like the art world.
You guys really went for it there.
But... I mean, shout out to the players who go through that program. They're amazing. You don't get mad at the artists.
Is it the program or the fans that you're really...
I'm not even mad at the fans. I'm not personally mad at Duke, but it is...
Benjamin was highlighting the fans, maybe.
I just like to get Nate riled up. I don't even know what it means. It's all just words to me.
Me and Nate have argued many nights about Duke players, and I try to keep a positive attitude, but there's some guys... that go there that are hilariously, like, they're caricatures, right? Cherokee Parks, Christian Laettner.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Christian Laettner, even I remember that asshole.
Bobby Hurley was great, but, like, so it was a bunch of white guys playing our favorite team of all time, the Michigan Wolverines, the Fab Five. Our dreams came true. It was the stylistic culmination of everything that had been building up with, like, rap music, young guys going to the NBA, kind of being... these high-flying dunking dudes who were beaten by these straight-laced white guys. It was amazing. It was amazing to watch.
I know who I'm picking in that sports movie. That's it from us. Go check out the Broadway Gallery. Google it. Check
Andrew,
out Quo.
Cookie, Joe,
Cookies
Hoops.
So much for having us.
What?
Cookies Hoops? Is that the
podcast? Check out Cookies Hoops wherever you listen to podcasts.
Benny out.